This is Dr. Stan here at Radio Liberty, coming to you from the hills overlooking beautiful and picturesque Monterey Bay, and bringing you the news behind the news, the story behind the story. Hoping to convince you that reality is usually scoffed at. Illusion is usually king. But in the battle for survival of Western civilization, it's going to be reality, not illusion or delusion, that will determine what the future will bring. I need to remind you the views that are expressed here are not necessarily those of the owners, management, staff, sponsors, or supporters of the station you're listening to. They happen to be my views, the views of our guests. And, well, tonight we have a very, very special guest. It's Major Doug Rocky, and he's been with us on our other programs in the past, and, well, he's certainly one of our favorite guests. And we're going to be talking about the problem of depleted uranium. Major Rocky has been retired from the military now, but he got a Ph.D. when he was in the military, and he was in charge of taking care of the equipment, American equipment, that was contaminated by friendly fire during the first Gulf War. We're talking about tanks, armored personnel carriers, and some of those were actually hit by our own depleted uranium shells. So he had a team of people assigned to him, and their job was to clean up this equipment so that it would be safe for people to use again. The trouble with depleted uranium, well, I'm going to let Major Rocky explain to you what depleted uranium is, because by its very name, it's designed to confuse you. A depleted uranium is 100% uranium. Major Rocky, thank you very much for being with us this evening again.
Yeah, good evening, Dr. Stan.
Why don't you explain to our listeners what depleted uranium is?
Well, depleted uranium is a byproduct of the uranium enrichment process that's conducted by the United States Department of Energy in order to extract fissionable isotopes of uranium to make nuclear weapons, which they're continuously doing, and to make nuclear reactor fuel. So for every 100 pounds of the isotopes, uranium-238, where you have 99.2 pounds, 0.7 pounds uranium-235, which is the primary fissionable isotope, and 0.1 pounds uranium-234, what happens is the DOE, Department of Energy scientists, extract 0.6 pounds of the fissionable isotopes for every 100 pounds. And the remainder is uranium hexafluoride, or actually depleted uranium. Hello?
Yes, I was going to say it is really completely uranium, but there's a little, it's all 238 with a little 234 and 235 mixed in.
That's correct, and it's also contaminated with plutonium, neptunium, and americium that got in there in the Department of Energy reactor vessels.
Well, now, what about the effect on the human body of depleted uranium? Because basically, of course, it's put into a dust form after it burns, after it's fired. What does depleted uranium do to the human body?
Well, depleted uranium is both a chemically toxic substance, just like lead paint dust, and it's also a radiologically toxic material because it gives off radioactive emissions. It gives off alpha particles, which are the helium nucleus. It gives off beta particles, which are basic high-speed electrons. And then it gives off gamma particles, which we would most commonly know as like X-rays, and all those things. So you've got a lot of ionizing radiation being given off that bombards the body once it's inside, but you'll have to also have the chemical toxicity, and then you have all the particulate irritation from the extremely fine particulates.
And of course, this gets into the lungs. Isn't that the primary way that it gets into the body?
Yes, you have inhalation, which is what destroyed my lungs and the other individuals I know, and also you have injection or, you know, absorption, i.e. shrapnel wounds and everything else.
Hold that stuff right there. Well, this is Dr. Stan, our guest this evening, Major Doug Rocky. We're talking about depleted uranium and, of course, its effect on the bodies of our people, and our troops, and then, of course, on the civilians in areas where there's large amounts of this. And, of course, we are just putting a tremendous amount of this into Iraq. We've also put tremendous amounts into both Bosnia and Kosovo?
Yes, Afghanistan and also Lebanon.
Right.
Plus all the sites here in the United States and abroad.
Well, now, certainly you mentioned that this gets into the lungs. And what does it do to the lungs? Does it cause a chronic fibrosis or what?
Well, yes, it does. I mean, the first thing that you have is this sort of like a bronchitis, and that develops into what you could call reactive airway disease. So you have your lungs are irritated by the particulate irritation, then they're irritated by the chemical toxicity. And then over a period of months, what you have is the fibrosis that sets in. So the lungs are actually scar tissue develops, and the alveoli sacs no longer function. You lose capability to transfer oxygen. But then the other thing that happens when that happens is your perfusion just drops dramatically. And so you start seeing chronic fatigue. You start seeing all the other problems that you're going to have encountered along with this stuff. It just messes it up. So you've got those starting right off.
Well, as most of the people who are working there, with these high levels of depleted uranium, those people working with you or under you there certainly in Kuwait and Afghanistan and Iraq, did many of them get this pulmonary problem?
Absolutely. And we've got thousands upon thousands that have now developed it any time it comes in contact. So that's the first thing that we saw. For our example, on ourselves, the respiratory and the rashes started within 24 to 48 hours of our initial assignment to clean up the mess and provide medical care. That was right after the completion of the ground war in 1991. And then we also had all kinds of problems when we conducted the research for the U.S. Army when I was director of the U.S. Army, which ended up being Department of Defense, which ended up being NATO project. And we conducted the extensive research. Again, we had all of the exposures and problems, even though, and I want to repeat, even though we wore the respiratory and skin protection provided by the United States Department of Defense and also provided by the U.S. Department of Energy. It went right through it.
Well, now, of course, is this a problem with the fibrosis? Is this related to the ionization, or is this related to the particulate and the irritation from this toxic metal, which is really what you're inhaling?
All of the above. You have the particulate irritation, you have the chemical toxicity, and you have the radiological. So you have all of those problems. Back in 2002, before the initiation of Gulf War II...
Hold that thought right there, Doug. We'll be right back in just a moment. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and our guest this evening is Major Doug Rocky, and we're talking about the effects of this dust that, of course, is inhaled by our troops and by the civilians in areas where depleted uranium munitions, and, of course, these can be certainly a machine gun, a shells, they can be mortars, they can be howitzers, they can be artillery, they can be bombs. I mean, depleted uranium weapons are very, very efficient killing weapons, and certainly as far as knocking out tanks and armored personnel carriers, I mean, there's nothing they can do as good a job, which is why the Army uses them. But they do not want to address the health effects that are associated with their use. And, of course, Major Rocky was talking about the pulmonary problems, not only the toxic chemical, but, of course, the particulate and then the ionizing effect. Now, what about the ionizing effect? Is some of this actually inhaled, get into the bloodstream and get to various parts of the body?
Yes, it does. And so in 2002, Colonel Wakayama, who was director of the Army Department of Defense Army Environmental Test and Evaluation Command, briefed the senior leadership of the Pentagon. And in that 2002 briefing, he clearly stated that you have all of the lung cancers well confirmed, you have the leukemias, you have all the effects on the eye, you have all the effects on all the other different organs, you have serious effects on the entire gastrointestinal system from consumption of eating contaminated food and water. And it's just the list just went on and on and on. One of the things most astonishing that I showed up with is in that briefing, he was very clear. He said that the alpha and beta particles would affect the eye and cause cataracts and everything else and damage to the eye. And lo and behold, that's exactly what happened to me. And finally, after years and years of begging, the VA that last February finally did the surgery to repair my eye. But we're seeing that all over. And then the birth effects.
How old a person are you? Because, you know, older people like me tend to get cataracts. You're not that old, though.
Well, I mean, yeah, I'm up there, but the cataracts were directly related because we had such extensive exposure to the all the uranium dust and all the stuff there. So the eye problems, you know, were, you know, confirmed, come showing up fairly rapidly when I was still in my 40s.
Okay, well, of course, that is very, very young for a cataract.
Well, absolutely.
Now, of course, have you lost a lung function, or a lot of the people that have had this, I mean, do they get short of breath very readily, or just have a limitation on what they can do because of their pulmonary inadequacy?
Well, that's correct. I mean, the perfusion, the O2 perfusion throughout the body is just dramatically reduced. So, yes, you have respiratory problems, your capability to walk up and down stairs or walk distances or run is just absolutely devastated. And we're seeing that throughout, not the older, you know, all the young kids today, too. I mean, within 1 year of Gulf War I, with all the exposures, we had over 5,000 with severe respiratory problems. Within 1 year, and to confirm this all from the VA medical data, for within 1 year we had 150-some cases of malignant tumors and cancers. And 8 of those were in one unit, 8 out of 20 individuals. They were absolutely confirmed, exposed, and everything came back, and they got the tumors. We also see horrible birth defects. Those are confirmed not only in U.S., but they're confirmed in Iraqi, Afghani, all over the place. And American citizens that surround, you know, the cancers and all the other problems are, that surround where weapons are manufactured or tested. For example, Concord, Massachusetts, the StarMed plant. It's just it's a medical disaster. Vieques, Puerto Rico, where they were tested for years and years and shot up, you know, like, you know, you go out practicing to shoot when you're going to war. Then also we have the Aerojet plant in Tennessee. Back in 1981, 60 Minutes did a story called On Strike for Their Lives, where the individuals who were manufacturing the DE rounds were having horrible medical problems. Same medical problems we have seen in Gulf War I, what we saw, you know, what was reported, what was seen in 73 and 74 when the Israelis used it against the Egyptians, all up to the president, where we're seeing it right now in Lebanon.
All right, fine. So basically, this is a very, very toxic substance, and yet, of course, has any effort to bring this out publicly been pretty well suppressed? I know you go up in the Internet, and there are a few good websites that you'll point out all the complications. One of them is that Trap Rock Peace website, traprockpeace.org, I think it is. Is that right?
That's absolutely correct. That's a Quaker website. It's the Trap Rock Peace Center at Woman Hill Quaker Center in Deerfield, Massachusetts. An incredible, incredible group of people dedicated to education and knowledge. So we have that. But one of the things that's very interesting, the Department of Defense, leaders in the Department of Defense are absolutely blatant and directive in their attacks against any of us. I just returned from a conference in Washington, D.C., where I specifically spoke on this. And again, then the attacks from the Department of Defense leaders were launched today. What they just simply do is they simply lie. We have to understand, and you can pull all these orders and regulations down at Trap Rock. You could probably pull them on the Department of Defense websites if you knew how to get them there, but they hide them. The United States Army issued an Army regulation signed by General Shinseki. This is U.S. Army Regulation 700-48. I wrote this back in the 1990s when I was the Depleted Uranium Project Director. It absolutely mandates thorough environmental remediation of all uranium contamination and other low-level radioactive materials from warfare, and it absolutely mandates prompt and effective medical care. The leaders of the Department of Defense, U.S. Army, the U.S. Air Force, the U.S. Navy, the U.S. Marine Corps, the U.S. Coast Guard, deliberately and willfully disregard the requirements of that regulation, just like they thoroughly disregard all of the medical orders that have been issued since I issued the first one in the spring of 1991 to provide prompt and effective medical care to all of our soldiers, much less any of our coalition soldiers. They absolutely disregard the Geneva Convention requirements and our own requirements to provide that same medical care to so-called enemy troops that we capture or wound, and they thoroughly and willfully disregard that requirement to provide medical care to the civilians of Jefferson Proving Ground, Indiana, Vieques, Puerto Rico, Albany, New York, Concord, Massachusetts.
They would want to do everything they can to protect our own men, our own troops. Certainly, you're not suggesting that people highly placed in the Army are unconcerned about the health hazards to our own men.
They are absolutely unconcerned, and they continue to disregard their own requirements, and I think the world is thoroughly aware of it, all military personnel, Anybody that served in Vietnam is thoroughly aware that they completely disregarded and continued to disregard the health effects of Agent Orange upon the Vietnam veteran and all the people that served there and on the civilians. They were absolutely and horribly affected then and continue to be affected today by the residual Agent Orange contamination. When I was given the tasking to clean up the depleted uranium mess following Gulf War I, the concern that General Schwarzkopf, and General Franks, General Brown, and all the other generals expressed immediately to us was that depleted uranium munitions was the new Agent Orange, and that we could expect horrible health effects. And from what I learned as the director of the Depleted Uranium Project, that's absolutely correct. And again, we want to make it very specific. Colonel Wakiyama in his briefing to the Department of Defense leaders in 2002, before the start of Gulf War II, and that briefing is available on Trap Rock, thoroughly confirmed all the problems. And he expressed a severe concern for the children of Iraq in that region as they played and everything and continued to live their lives and go to school in the areas where the uranium contamination was great, contaminated air, water, food, and soil.
Well, of course, can you actually measure this with the Geiger counter? I thought that the major part of the radiation was the alpha, and you can't get that with the average radiation meter.
That's absolutely correct. What we found out from our firsthand experience that in order to measure the alpha contamination, that you have to use a very special scintillation probe for alpha's particles, and you cannot be any farther than away than the thickness of a human finger. If you're any greater than thickness of a human finger away from the alpha contamination, the uranium dust where the alpha emissions are, you'll never measure it.
Well, how about the beta and gamma and delta?
Well, the beta, gamma, and the X-rays, the betas and the gammas, you have to use a very specialized probe called a beta flat pancake probe or an alpha a gamma probe. And if you're anything greater than 4 to 6 inches away, you won't measure it. So, again, this is not so much as an external hazard. However, one of the significant problems we saw in Gulf War I and we've seen again and with the civilians is these things are kind of neat. So they pick them up and they put them in their pocket. I'd taken them away from troops that were wearing pieces of it on a chain around their neck, right next to their heart. So we're seeing all kinds of problems. But once this is in the body, the alpha emissions, what we've measured, and we've never really been able to get lower than, is on the order of 10,000 counts per minute. It's an incredible bombardment of radiological. And the United States Army very specifically states in the U.S. Army Technical Bulletin 9-1300-278 that the maximum permissible alpha exposure is no greater than 200 counts per minute. But we never, ever, ever saw anything less than 10,000 on up to a million counts per minute for the alphas. As far as the beta gamma, the United States Army specifies in the technical bulletin, the maximum dose rate permissible is no greater than 0.05 millirems per hour. And we never, ever were able to get it less than 300 millirems per hour. No matter what you do, you can't do it. You can't break it up into fine pieces. Because you could break it up as small as possible where you can't even find it, and the radioactive emissions remain the same.
All right, fine. Well, if anybody would like to see a lot of these details, actually there is a DVD we carry that actually has Nature Rocky in it. It's called Beyond Treason, but there's an extra CD there that actually has all of these records, all the military records, and you'll actually see what the military says, so you'll actually get the DVD. And that, is that a DVD or is that a CD that where all those records are?
The records are on a CD, so you can just put it in your computer.
Oh, in fact, so you'll actually get that if you order Beyond Treason from Radio Liberty or a four-tape set, certainly on Depleted Uranium or the other material we carry on this subject. Well, Major, certainly. Now, weren't you actually at one time ordered not to tell the truth about this?
Absolutely. I was given a memorandum called the Los Alamos Memorandum. It was issued by Lieutenant Colonel Michael Zeem, United States Marine Corps, on March 1st of 1991. And in this memorandum, the direction was to sustain proponency for the use of uranium munitions even though we know about the adverse health and environmental effects. Because if we did not do that and we did not lie in our after-action reports, the rounds would become politically unacceptable, unacceptable by any stance in the United States and Great Britain and Canada and Australia, who use these extensively, would lose their use in combat and thus lose a very effective combat tool.
Well, of course, you know, but of course we have to consider, we should be considered the health of our servicemen, and yet I'm sure that many of the elite really have no use or have utter contempt for the people out in the front lines, and that is unconscionable when they know that they're intentionally hurting the health of our people. We know that of the men who served in the first Gulf War, do we have any idea of how many of those now have a permanent disability?
Well, according to the United States Department of Veteran Affairs, and the most recent report was issued on it was issued at the end of June, and that was cumulative as of May 30th of 2006. In that report, and you can obtain that report at www.va.gov, repeat, www.va.gov, and once you get to the VA website, up in the upper right-hand corner, you'll put in the search term GWVIS.
Go do that one more time. What is it?
It's the website is W.
I got that far, but what's the
The search term is GWVIS.
GWVIS. What's the VIS for?
And that stands for the Gulf War Veterans Information System.
All right,
that's
fine.
Your actual casualty report. When you get that report up and you go, I think it's page 9 or page 10, which, you know, it depends on how it's formatted any given day, you'll see the pension and compensation and pension statistics. And the first column is labeled conflict. That are those individuals, the casualties from Gulf War I proper, April and May of 1990 through the fall of 1991. And as of May 30th, the VA acknowledges over 260,000 individuals participating in Gulf War I have now applied for permanent disability and permanent medical care through the United States Department of Veteran Affairs. Over 260,000 that participated in Gulf War I. That's well over one-third. Yeah. Well over one-third.
And, Chris, now, is that all that have applied, or is that having to do with the number that actually got the permanent disability?
Well, the permanent disability, again, as of the end of May, had been awarded to way over 200,000, but we had close to 30, 40,000 where they're just absolutely thoroughly denied medical care. And I get continuous phone calls from individuals that are sick, continuous emails, knocks on the door, where these individuals are absolutely sick or wounded or injured, and they're flatly denied medical care. You have to understand, a veteran has to verify and prove himself that he was exposed or injured through the records that are available. But what we have found that most of these records have been deliberately destroyed at the National Records Center at St. Louis, Missouri, at the U.S. Army Human Resources Command, which is also known as AR-PERSCOM. And I've been down there personally verifying that my own records and the records of my staff, my team, were destroyed.
Hold on. We'll be right back. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and our guest is Major Doug Rocky. And, of course, Doug Rocky is mentioning that basically you can go up on the VA website. It's va.gov, isn't it?
That is correct, sir.
And then, of course, you go to GWVIS. That's Gulf War Veterans Information Service, GWVIS. There's a search point there. And you can find out that about 264,000 veterans of the first Gulf War. Now, remember, we had about 690,000 men deployed. Over 264,000 have they applied or have been granted? They can say they've applied, and then there are over 200,000 that have actually received their permanent disability?
That is correct. And then when we go to the next other column, the third column is labeled deployed, and that includes everybody up to the present time that have gone to the Persian Gulf. And what we find out when we go to the column labeled deployed, that out of everybody that's gone in the Persian Gulf since April and May of 2000, we've got about 375,000 now that have applied for permanent disability, and about 300,000 have been awarded permanent disability and permanent medical care for life.
Now, does that include first and second or just second?
deployed includes first and second. So if you want to know the specific data for Gulf War II, you just have to subtract column one from column three.
All right, fine. And so that's well over 300, 300 what thousand?
Yeah, 300. I'm not sure. I haven't got the numbers in front of me right now. But you, it's over 300,000.
All right, fine. So, ladies and gentlemen, what we're doing is we're destroying the health of our young men. And the thing is that they know that in Washington, D.C., and you have to ask yourself why. We also have something we've put together. It's called Planned Population Reduction. It's a talk we gave that doesn't just talk about depleted uranium. It talks about the myriad of things they're doing to damage the health of the American people. And we hear all this talk about how concerned they are, and at the CDC, why we would never do anything that would hurt people. And I want to tell you, they're not telling the truth. You need to see the talk on planned population reduction available from Radio Liberty, along with all the other items we've talked about dealing with depleted uranium. And if you have not seen Beyond Treason, put out by Joyce Rowley, and you really need to get it, because you'll actually get to meet Colonel Major Rocky on that video. He does a magnificent job of talking about the depleted uranium, and you can see all the government documents. And then, of course, if you go up on the Internet, you will find some sites that tell you how dangerous this is, and then other sites that are up there, I believe intentionally, to mislead people, because, of course, you get conflicting information. A lot of people get so confused, they can't think it through. But certainly I went to the Royal Institute of Medicine before I and looked at their information, the British website, and they certainly agree that there is a very real danger from uranium, depleted uranium. But, of course, the AMA, the American Medical Association, and all the lackeys of the establishment keep assuring everybody that there's nothing to worry about. Isn't this infuriating to you and the men who've served your country and are so ill?
Yes, absolutely. But we have to remember that we have not only the uranium contamination, we have all the contamination from conventional munitions that are just also horrific contamination and those consequence adverse health and environmental effects. With today's technology, we have to think about what we use in technology, what we use in our houses, in industry, in medicine, in education, in agriculture. When you go to war and you release and destroy all this stuff, this whole toxic mess is released into the environment, and you have thus a total toxic wasteland. That's what we're seeing today in Iraq. That's what we see in the Balkans. That's what we see in Afghanistan. And unbelievably, that is what we're seeing in Lebanon. We have to understand the United States Department of Defense, with willful and thorough disregard for the health and environmental effect, provided Israel with the bunker busters made out of uranium munitions for use against the Lebanese civilians. They provided the cluster bombs for use against Lebanese civilians. And that's turned into a complete, thorough nightmare. But on the other side, we have the Hezbollah, who use conventional explosives against the Israelis. And that's unconscionable. So it's wrong all the way around. One thing we do know from firsthand experience, that the dispersal of all of this contamination, the radiological contamination, and the conventional contamination goes not just 1 or 2 kilometers, but hundreds and hundreds, and actually thousands upon thousands of kilometers. So what we have done is thoroughly contaminated in the Middle East now, God's and Allah's backyard.
Getting into the water and into food? Does it get into the food cycle? Is it dangerous if it's ingested?
Well, absolutely. Colonel Wakiyama in his briefing thoroughly confirmed that was a serious concern, and that we also have total confirmation of the RNA and DNA changes once it gets in the body, which then affects genetic code. We see all the horrible birth effects, and we see incredible medical problems.
All right, fine. We're going to be back here in just a moment with Major Doug Rocky, and if you'd like to give us a call, our telephone number is 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295. Well, this is Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty, and our guest is Major Doug Rocky. We're talking about the scourge of depleted uranium. And as you really begin getting into this and you study it, and you find the number of young men who came back for the first Gulf War, and now from the second Gulf War, who are ill, and they're ill probably for many, many reasons. Among them are, this depleted uranium. Do we have any idea what percentage of the people who are ill and have received permanent disability have it as a direct result of the depleted uranium, or is it sort of, depleted uranium and vaccinations and mycoplasm and exposure to the sarin and other poisonous gas? Do we have any idea, or can we separate them at all?
I wish that I could separate them. Unfortunately, the leaders in the United States Department of Defense thoroughly disregard the medical order mandate issued by the Pentagon and the Surgeon General that they must provide a prompt radiobioassay test, that's a collection of urine, the feces, and to do a nasopharyngeal swab within 24 hours of exposure. That they must not only do that, they must monitor everything and then ensure what's happening. So there's a thorough disregard. What happened from Gulf War I is I issued immediate medical care orders that were disregarded. The theater medical commander for the 3rd MedCom, that's 3rd Medical Command, 3rd U.S. Army Medical Command, issued immediate medical orders for all of the personnel, and that order was issued in June of 1991, which was thoroughly disregarded. The United States Deputy Secretary of Defense issued the order on June 8th of 1993. General Erich Shinseki, who just stepped down as the number one Army general that led us in all these battles, personally signed the order in August of 1993. The Pentagon again issued the order in the fall, in October of 1993, totally disregarded. And then it was continuously issued, and the most recent order was issued by the now-retired Surgeon General of the U.S. Army, General Peake, and that was the end of April of 2004. Thoroughly disregarded. And I mean, understand, the United States General Accounting Office in the 2000 report that we prepared for Congress confirmed that in the year 2000, only 51 individuals had ever been tested out of thousands upon thousands upon thousands who were required by directives to be tested. And then as of a year ago, the United States Department of Veteran Affairs and their Gulf War review thoroughly confirmed that only 270 had ever been tested. Well, I personally submitted over 400 names. The Deputy Secretary of Defense told President William Clinton back in September of 1998 and his staff that there were over 400 that needed immediate medical
care.
Hold
that thought. We'll be right back in just a moment with Major Rocky. Well, this is Dr. Stan. Our guest is Major Doug Rocky, and, of course, we're talking about the depleted uranium. And, of course, Major Rocky's pointing out that the military, and there are a number of key people and generals and surgeon generals who've ordered that certainly the people who've been exposed to depleted uranium should, within 24 hours, be examined and their various bodily fluids checked and nasal swabs done to see the exposure to depleted uranium. But the problem with this is that when you are in a battle situation, and let's say you're going to be shelling a city, you're going to be shelling the city with depleted uranium, and then as soon as, of course, the shelling stops, you've got to get your troops in there to get out the insurgents or whoever may be there. And there's no time, to get them out and get them evaluated and, of course, get them checked. And what are you going to do for them anyway if you do find that they, they've been contaminated with depleted uranium? Is there anything you could effectively do once they've been contaminated?
First off is prevention. Okay,
oh, sure.
The United States Army Common Task Training, the U.S. Army Regulation 700-48, the U.S. Army Pamphlet 700-48, and the U.S. Army Technical Bulletin 9-1300-278 absolutely, and I want to repeat, absolutely mandate that all military and civilian personnel must wear full respiratory and skin protection to minimize the exposures within 50 meters radius, that's within 160 feet radius of every single incident, until that is thoroughly, thoroughly cleaned up. And obviously, you can't do that and you don't do it. And what we have absolutely verified, and I verified it again today, with troops in Iraq, that they were not told this. They were not provided the equipment, and the exposures continue to occur. But we have to understand that when we issued a medical order mandating prompt and effective medical care for U.S. military personnel, we must provide that same medical care on a Geneva Convention and our own laws of land warfare to the coalition troops, the enemy troops, and absolutely the civilians that are affected, whether they be in Concord, Massachusetts, where our nation was born, Vieques, Puerto Rico, Jefferson Proving Ground in Indiana, Kings Mount in New Hampshire, or Iraq, Afghanistan, the Balkans, or, you know, we're going to up-and-coming use in Iran. There's no doubt about that. And then also Lebanon now.
Well, I think that the problem is that it's totally impractical to do this. Not that it shouldn't be done, but the thing is we should not be using the depleted uranium shells, no matter how effective they are, if they are going to endanger the lives of our and health of our own men and of the civilians in that area, and if it's going to endanger the health of, you know, the enemy troops, because this acts very effectively almost like a poison gas or like a poison chemical, doesn't it?
Well, it's absolutely correct, and that's the reason why the United Nations ruled that the use of uranium munitions was illegal years and years and years ago. But again, we disregard that for our own purposes because they're effective at killing and destroying. But the other thing, too, we have to come down to the fundamental thing. Let's go back to the first use that we know of, the Israelis in 1973 and 74. We don't know how much was used, but it's littered and the health effects have been confirmed. Those health effects and environmental effects have been reported to the National Academy of Sciences, Institute of Medicine, thoroughly confirmed. Then we had approximately 375 tons of solid uranium, not just the munitions, but solid uranium used in Gulf War I. We went on to use 30 to 40 tons in the Balkans in 94. We used another 30 to 40 tons of the Balkans in 1999 and 2000. And I must reiterate that Dr. Pekka Visto of the United Nations ordered the Department of Defense to clean up the uranium contamination according to the Army regulations in the Balkans, and the Department of Defense refused. Then we used probably 1,000 tons at least in Afghanistan, and probably 2,000 tons in Iraq. In 2003, just shortly after it started, leaders at the Pentagon confirmed the use of already 500 tons had been used almost immediately, and that's because of the extensive weapons that now contain uranium munitions. So at that, and then there's no telling. We know for a fact in Lebanon that the United States sent the Israelis at least 105,000-pound bombs of uranium munitions for use against Lebanese cities and civilian population areas. And they did, without any doubt. Then we have all the cluster bombs. What you have to come down to the fundamental thing, nobody on God's earth, no nation, no individual has the right to take much less 10 pounds, much less 1,000 tons of solid radioactive toxic materials, throw that in somebody else's backyard, then refuse to clean up that contamination as they are required to do by their own orders and regulations, and simply refuse to provide medical care to all of the casualties, repeat, all of the casualties affected. But that's what we have done. That is what England has done, what Canada has done previously, what Australia has done, and now what the Israelis absolutely have done. And obviously other nations see the usefulness of this, and they will use it.
Well, now, of course, is the United Nations making any action, any effort to, you know, bring charges for the use of this? In other words, it sounds to me like this is just totally immoral. Where is the United Nations, you know, in their effort to dramatize this? Have been any United Nations hearings on this or any United Nations communications pointing out the danger and this is a violation of international law?
Yes, they have. And what we had done several weeks ago, because of the use of uranium munitions by Israel and Lebanon, the United Nations did dispatch a team by request of Karen Parker, one of the great human rights lawyers and United Nations lawyers, to Lebanon to look at all the contamination. Again, we have to understand, we have to come back. This violates Geneva Convention. It violates the laws of land warfare because it's indiscriminate. It remains forever. It permanently contaminates air, water, and soil. I mean, all of these points in this legal briefing and everything has been thoroughly discussed and written up by Karen Parker, and you can read this on the Trap Rock Peace website. It's thoroughly discussed and brought up by Ramsey Clark, former Attorney General of the United States, thoroughly brought up and discussed by Francis Boyle of the University of Illinois College of Law, again, one of the great international lawyer experts. And then common sense. We have to come to common sense. Does anybody believe rightfully believe that the United States or these other nations have the right to disperse thousands and thousands of pounds and tons of radioactive munitions in somebody else's backyard. There's nobody here that would want 1 pound in their backyard, their schoolyard, or in their church, or in their hospital, much less allow it to any place else. So we have to put this back into common sense.
Well, now, Chris, you commented that there has been an increase in the incidence of birth defects in the children of the, people who came back from the first and the second Gulf War, and in the children of Iraq. You know, is there a significant increase of birth defects in the southern part of Iraq where this was used back in 1991?
Well, absolutely. Dr. Ali, who's one of the great surgeons, he's an Iraqi surgeon, but he also sits on the British Royal College of Surgeons and Physicians, has thoroughly confirmed that. Those reports are up on Trap Rock also. They have been presented before the Karolinska Institute in Stockholm. That's the Nobel group. They have been presented at the University of Hamburg, Germany conference. They presented, again, they were just presented at a conference in Japan just in the last few weeks. And then also we have thorough confirmation amongst the U.S. military personnel. For example, the New York's finest, the police and fire that survived the World Trade Center disaster, were activated and deployed as part of the New York's 442nd New York National Guard Military Police Unit. The individuals were absolutely exposed. They were denied medical care. Children were conceived, and birth defects were absolutely found in the children that were born once, at the end of the term. And it continues on to this day without any hesitation, without any changes. We have to understand, the uranium affects the RNA and DNA. It affects the genetic code of the body. That's been confirmed in the Navajos and the Four Corners and all the areas where the uranium has been mined. That has been confirmed wherever it's been tested. It has been confirmed in the Gulf War I veterans that had DU shrapnel in them. And it's thoroughly confirmed in everybody else. I mean, it's just that simple. I mean, Colonel Wakayama was very clear in his briefing to the Pentagon leaders prior to Gulf War II that that would happen. And they disregarded it because uranium munitions are extraordinarily effective against all targets, to include water treatment facilities in Iraq and Lebanon and all over, to include sewage sanitation, to include hospitals, which were definitely shot up, and to include conventional apartment buildings and houses, much less all the armor and everything.
I know there have been a number of meetings in past years of international groups where this subject has been brought up, and yet it's totally blacked out by the controlled media. And this is really what's so disturbing, is people throughout the world are trying to get the truth out about the fact that we're poisoning our own soldiers and we're poisoning the civilians in other countries. But someday, somebody is going to have to be held responsible for this. Somebody has to make the decisions, you know, that we're going to continue using this not only a deadly weapon, but deadly as far as the health consequences are concerned. So, you know, how are we going to get anything specifically done? We talk about it. But the average American, they go to their doctor, and your doctor is going to say, and I went to a meeting just recently, oh, there's no harm in depleted uranium. And, of course, one of the doctors got up and said, look, I've treated some of the people. You've had the pulmonary complications of it. Everybody looked sort of amazed. And these were good doctors, you know, but they just never heard this because the information is not getting into the average medical journal. Is there any place besides the Trap Rock Peace website, traprockpeace.org website, where people can get valid medical information about the terrible effects and disastrous effects of the depleted uranium?
Well, yeah, we have the Uranium Medical Research Center that U.S. Army Colonel, retired Dr. Asa Durakovich runs in Canada. And again, I think it's www.umrc.org. I'm not sure, because, again, they come under continuous attacks. One thing that's important, whenever you go to a website and look on depleted uranium, does that website include copies of and thorough discussion of all the orders mandate and prompt and effective medical care? Does that website include the U.S. Army regulations mandating thorough and prompt environmental remediation and thorough and prompt medical care? If those websites disregard those orders and the regulations, you have to question them. One thing that we have learned, that the in this time since we started speaking out, the leaders from the Pentagon that launched all the attacks to silence the media, to silence all of us that had the responsibility and are speaking out, they thoroughly, thoroughly disregard the orders and the regulations, and their way is to shoot the messenger as if shooting the messenger allows them to thoroughly disregard and absolve themselves of responsibility for compliance with their own orders, laws, regulations, and directives. It's just thoroughly, thoroughly astonishing.
But you know, when you first get started on studying these things, and whether it be the effect of fluoride and poisoning the minds of our children, or the effect of mercury and its disastrous effects on the brains of our children, or the aspartame, which is an excitotoxin which destroys the brains of our children, you know, and you study this and you say, how could this possibly be true? I mean, where are the people there in positions of authority, the FDA and the CDC, who should be protecting the American people, and why aren't they telling the truth? Is it they don't know the truth? And after a while, you come to the conclusion, of course they know the truth. They just don't want the American people to know, and they always hide behind this idea, oh, if there's anything wrong, why, we would certainly stop using it. We're here to protect your health. And it's so difficult for people to understand. There really are people who have a different worldview, and they really are not concerned about protecting health. You only need to read some of the writings of Bertrand Russell to find out how, through diet and injections and injunctions, we were going to change the attitude and minds of our people. And that's on page 50 of his book, The Impact of Science on Society. So our telephone number is 1-888-24-LIBERTY. That's 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295. And if this is the first time you've heard about depleted uranium, why, you know, I don't blame you if you're a little wary about this. I was wary when I first got started reading on it, but I've read enough and I've talked to enough people and I've looked at these government statistics. Oh, well over 300,000 of our Gulf War veterans from the First and Second Gulf War, well over 300,000 have applied for permanent disability. How could that possibly have happened? These are young, healthy men in the prime of their lives. I mean, actuarial figures for life insurance, you know, they just wouldn't hold true at all. Do we have any idea how many have actually died? I've heard a figure between 10 and 15,000 of these young men are dead. Do we have any idea?
Oh, you've opened up the can of worms that the government does not want acknowledged whatsoever. If you go to the actual GWVIS report, and we just go to the first, the third, the column labeled deployed, the first row is the number of individuals that have been deployed into the Persian Gulf from May of 1990 through the end of May of 2006, and that's about 1.2 million that have been deployed and now have been discharged and gone to the VA. And the second row is the states very specifically the estimated living veterans. So all you have to do is subtract row two from row one, and you find out the number of individuals that have probably died since they did this thing. It's 180,000.
180,000.
That's correct. Now, you have to understand, all soldiers from military personnel, when we're deployed to war, we can run all day and we can leap tall buildings at a single bound, because otherwise you would not be deployed. And the majority of these individuals are extremely healthy young kids in an extremely healthy cohort group. But then when you go to those individuals where we have direct combat deaths, okay, and the VA again states in there it's over about 16,000. Not 2,500, about 16,000. But we have to understand, casualties are divided into different categories. The United States military medical establishment divides casualties into three categories. You have wounded in action, WIA. Those are individuals that are shot, blown, or bought by enemy munitions during combat. Enemy engagement. Then you have KIA, killed in action. Those that are who died as a result of direct combat engagements with the enemy. And then you have disease and non-battle injury, DNVI, which is historically since antiquity, been the majority of casualties, and that includes both those that survive and those that die.
All right, fine. Well, let's go to Santa Cruz, to Mike calling from Santa Cruz. Mike, do you have a question for our guest?
Yeah, about that report. I'm looking on the website. I'm not sure if I'm finding the exact right one. Would that be, you said something about the ninth one down or so?
Well, it's, you go to page 9, you get into the May 2006 report. It should be at the top of the page. And then it's on page 9 or 10 where you have the primary statistics on that report.
Okay.
Okay.
Did it say May 2006?
That's correct.
WGIS report. That's at the top of the list.
Okay, fine. Okay, if you pull it down, let's look ahead in the morning.
Okay.
Well, let's see. This is Dr. Stan here, and right now we've got Mike calling from Houston, Texas. Hi, Mike. Do you have a question for...
Dr. Stan. I sure appreciate you getting Colonel Rocky on.
He's only a major, not a colonel yet.
Okay, well, I'd give him a promotion for the good work he's done. I wonder if there's any connection been made by anybody between the need to get rid of the waste, or the nuclear waste that we have from our plants and processes and mining and so forth, and throwing all this waste that we want to get rid of over in somebody else's land. And then also, seemed to me it'd be a good method of population reduction, population control.
Yeah,
I wonder
if there's
that connection.
Well, that's why I included this in my talk on planned population reduction, which is available either on video or on DVD from Radio Liberty at 1-800-544-8927. That's 1-800-544-8927. But Major Rocky, how would you respond to Mike, who's calling from Houston, Texas?
You have an extremely brilliant person there, Mike, who's just called in. The United States Department of Energy in the Environmental Impact Statement for the disposal of uranium hexafluoride, which is depleted uranium, specifically states and identifies the use of it in uranium munitions to be dispersed in enemy lands as one way of disposing of our radioactive waste.
Yeah.
It's also used in most commercial aircraft. It's also used in forklifts. And it's also used in DU-crete. That's a concrete mixture, DU-crete, D-U-C-R-E-T-E, which is a concrete mixture using uranium to dispose of it there.
Sure.
So, yes, the Department of Energy deliberately and willfully decided to disperse and dispose of our radioactive waste that they cannot do legally and effectively in our nation, in another nation, causing adverse health and environmental effects.
Yeah.
The
okay.
second part...
That's very similar to the fluoride.
It sure is.
Fluoride's a waste product from aluminum and, I guess, some other manufacturing.
Yeah, fertilizer.
And, of course, I've always felt like when I saw them using that stuff, long-term illnesses in Iraq, the oil companies and the odd people that want those resources that Iraq has would like to not have any Iraqi people there.
We keep on working. We may not have any Iraqis or any Iranians there. But the trouble is we may end up losing an awful lot of Americans, too, because men and women become accomplices to the evils they fail to
oppose. Absolutely. This is evil.
Amen. Hey, we got to let you go. God bless.
Okay, thank you very much,
Mike.
Doc. I appreciate it, Doctor. Thank you.
Okay, and, of course, Major, thank you so very much for being with us again, and please keep us posted as what's going on.
Well, Dr. Stan, the key thing is here, everybody must contact everybody in
there. Hold on, Doc. We'll be right back. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and Major Rocky was just telling us what to do. What can and should people do?
What everybody must call their congressmen, their senators, the president, the leaders of the Department of Defense, their town mayors, because this comes back into the community, and demand that the United States Department of Defense, NATO, the United Nations, England, Australia, Canada, comply with the orders and regulations mandating prompt and effective medical care for everybody, and that they comply with the orders, laws, and regulations requiring thorough environmental remediation of all the contamination. That is a legal requirement that is thoroughly and completely disregarded this time. And all the citizens of the world, all Americans, must stand up and demand that they comply in accountability, because it's not only right as an American, God bless America, but it's right under God and Allah, under Buddha, and all of the religions of the world. That
is our obligation. I sure giving Christianity a bad name. And everything we're doing is almost like we're intentionally trying to destroy the belief in the Christian faith for people throughout the world. Major, thank you very much for being with us. It's always a pleasure, and we'll look forward to talking to you again. Anything comes up, you know how to get in touch with me.
Thank you. Have a good evening, sir.
Good night. God bless. All right, fine. Well, that was Major Rocky. Now, we do actually, of course, have the DVD. It's called Beyond Treason. It's put out by our good friend Joyce Riley, and if you would like to get the DVD, it actually not only has the one regular DVD, but it has without a CD, has all the documentation on there that you need to be able to discuss this well. Remember the website, traprockpeace.org, traprockpeace.org, and of course there are many other websites. We do have a four-tape set on depleted uranium. We have the DVD I talked about, Planned Population Reduction. You can get it in DVD, or you can get it in VHS. We did that for the Prophecy Club. So we do hope that you'll get this information and that you'll help to get the truth out. Because remember, if we're unconcerned about what's happening to the civilians in Iraq, who's going to be concerned if similar things happen here at home? And if our wicked leaders are wicked enough to do this, not only to the Iraqi military and to the Iraqi civilians, but to our own men. Is any man's family or property safe here? Now, our telephone number is 1-800-544-8927. That's 1-800-544-8927. Our webpage is www.radioliberty.com. I do want to mention that we are having our annual Radio Liberty seminar. It's going to be on the 29th of October. It's a Sunday, but it's all day long. We're going to have Constance Cumby. We're going to have Chris Pinto. We're going to have other great speakers. We're going to be serving lunch. So you have to get your reservations, and we hope that you give us a call at 1-800-544-8927. 1-800-544-8927, and bring anybody that you can get. I think it'll be a great time. I know the people who've come in the past, at the end of the day, they just don't want it to stop. So we'll hope it'll be even better this year. Again, the 29th of October, and right now you call in 1-800-544 and make your reservation. And then, of course, we do want to mention that we do carry the Berkey products, and we do carry health products. If you'd like a copy of our health catalog, we are on the way towards war with Iran. And what you really want to do is begin laying in supplies. If you do need any food supplies, we have a catalog on that we'll be making available. You can just call our 800 number and ask for the food catalog. You need to start making your preparations. If you'd like a copy of our health catalog, you need the supplements and other things. You need to be able to keep your health up for the difficult times that lie ahead. So begin making your preparations. Of course, we hope many of you will want to get my book, Brotherhood of Darkness, so you can understand the spiritual forces that energize these wicked people. If you haven't yet seen our material on population control, you can get my Population Control Agenda monograph. It's up on my webpage, but if you get any of the other items, we can send you a free one if you request it. We have a four-tape set on population control. We have a video on population control. We even have a population control special. Call us at 1-800-544-8927. Please pray for America. Pray for revival. Pray for Radio Liberty. Please pray for our provision and our protection. And we'll be right back in a moment. Well, this is Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty, coming to you from the hills overlooking beautiful and picturesque Monterey Bay and bringing you the news behind the news, the story behind the story. Hoping to convince you that reality is usually scoffed at. Illusion is usually king. But in the battle for survival of Western civilization, it's going to be reality, not illusion or delusion, that will determine what the future will bring. And I need to remind you the views that are expressed here are not necessarily those of the owners, management, staff, sponsors, or supporters of the station you're listening to. They happen to be my views, the views of our guests, and of course, for this hour, we're going to have with us our good friend Al Duncan. And for those of you who haven't read Al's book, what's the title of the book, Al?
The Master Plan.
The Master Plan. In fact, I write the foreword to the book. If you haven't read it, we do carry it. And it's a fascinating, it's a fiction story, but it's very apropos to everything going on today and truly prophetic in what it talks about. It has a profound impact. If you haven't read The Master Plan, let me suggest you do. In fact, I contributed somewhat to getting the book published because I thought it was so important. And we still have, some of them available. That's The Master Plan by Al Duncan, who's our guest tonight. Al, do you still have some copies of the book?
I do still have some, Dr. Stan.
All right, fine. I hope some people out there would like to get it. But this evening we're going to be talking about a book that Al sent me a copy of. It's written by a man named Jacques Attali, and the book is called Millennium. Winners are losing in the coming world order. Now, the book is written, about 1990, somewhere in there?
Apparently, he wrote it in 1990. It was published in 1991.
All right, it was published, actually, in France and translated into English. Mr. Toffler writes the preface to this. You remember Alvin Toffler, who wrote Future Shock? And, of course, he is certainly one of the people who is well aware of what the future holds. Now, Millennium is the story about the New World Order and what it is going to mean to the people of the world. And what is really so fascinating, as you read the book, they've actually evaluated exactly what's going to happen, and they feel that the center of power is going to move away from the United States to Europe and, of course, to Asia, primarily in China and Japan. At that time, they were speaking primarily of Japan. Now, the gentleman who wrote the book heads a bank that has some $9 billion in it. He obviously is a very well-versed individual, very powerful, but he talks about, of course, what this world that they are planning is going to bring about. And it's going to bring about a tremendous disparity between wealth and poverty. And he talks about, people who will be so prosperous. And most people, even in the North, it would be America and other first world countries, most people, or so many people, will be impoverished. Oh, there'll be a few people, of course, who are fabulously wealthy, and everything is based upon materialism and consumerism. And the determining factor of everything is money. And, of course, this form of commerce, so-called free enterprise that's coming down the line, is going to be what motivates this new world order that's coming along. And, of course, they'll be able to have the power of the military and the police behind them. And so we'll have this total disparity, between the rich and the poor. So, Al, why don't you speak about your thoughts on this?
Well, Dr. Stan, the first time I heard about Jacques Attali, we're going to go on a break?
No, go ahead. Get started, and I'll let you know when.
Okay, very good. The first time I heard about him was from Alan Watt, and he had mentioned the book The Millennium, and subtitled Winners and Losers of the Coming World Order. But in order for me to find out, he made a statement, and this statement, to me, was profound. And what he said was that the American people will be like boat people looking for work in other countries.
And that's exactly what Attali says in his book. We'll be back in just a moment here at Radio Liberty. Well, Al, go ahead and pick the story up there.
And so naturally, that sparked my interest, so I began a search for the book. And I couldn't find a new one, but I did find a used copy.
And then I commenced to read it. It's a small book, only about 130 pages, but I found it to be extremely informative. And then when I called you, Dr. Stan, and asked you, were you familiar with this writer, if you recall, I also mentioned that most of the books that I've read, I may highlight a line or maybe two in a paragraph, but in this book, I could literally highlight every single line with justification. So I read the book and read it actually a couple of times, and trying to find the exact quote of Alan that Alan Watt had given, and I came to a couple of really good points. And here's one. He says, "These wealthy wanderers will everywhere be confronted by roving masses of poor nomads, boat people, on a planetary scale, seeking to escape from the destitute periphery where most of the Earth's population would continue to live." And that really struck my attention. But here he says something about America. He says, although there is no specific mention in that particular verse about America becoming boat people and roaming the world looking for work, Talley does make it clear many times that the United States' demise is evident. And I quote one of those times here. He says, "For in the emergent order taking root in this pre-millennial decade, the two military superpowers, the United States and the Soviet Union, are slouching toward relative, if not absolute, decline." So this, we have to keep in mind, was written 15 years ago. And the things that he says in this are just astounding.
Well, I think the thing that really impresses me most is that we know that everything that is going on is being planned by the elite. And, of course, Mr. Talley makes the point that if you go back throughout history, there's always been an elite that ruled the people. Of course, you had to give the impression of democracy. You had to give the impression that people really had representative government. But the reality is you have an elite, and that elite is going to determine what's happening. But, of course, it is the policies of our elite here in the United States to transfer the wealth of this country to other nations, which really doesn't make sense. As we create a new elites in other nations, as we transfer the wealth of our nation to other nations, but more than that, the preeminence of our nation to Europe and, of course, to the Orient. We'll be right back here in just a moment. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and our guest is Al Duncan. And Al, of course, has sent me this book called Millennium. And it's talking about the New World Order. The book is written 15 years ago. And what it does, it basically says that the center of power is going to shift away from the United States. It's going to shift to Europe, and it's going to shift to Orient. And now back in 1990, they were talking about Tokyo, but increasingly now we see that the power is really shifting to China. It makes the point that if you don't have an industrial base, then you cannot be a great nation. Well, now, our leaders have intentionally, purposely, maliciously destroyed the industrial base of this country by taking down our tariffs, sacrificing our industries to shift the manufacturing to other countries throughout the world. Had we kept our tariffs in place, had our great banks and great organizations like the World Bank and the IMF and the Asian Development Bank and the Agency for International Development, and certainly Goldman Sachs and J.P. Morgan and General Motors and Intel and so many of our great corporations, had they not invested literally trillions of dollars in China, China would not be the industrial center it is today. So what has happened is certainly not by accident. It's happened by intent, and it is part of a master plan. They really do intend to destroy our country. That's why they're destroying our currency. And he makes the point very well that, if you study the nations of the past, for instance, Spain during the 1600s, a very, very powerful nation. Spain had a powerful navy, the Spanish Armada. They had a powerful military. But they also were involved in war after war after war. And they developed an over bearing debt, a debt that they could not possibly handle. And when the nation went bankrupt, Spain ceased to be a great nation and was reduced to a position where it is today. Did you pick that up, Al?
By all means. Dr. Stan, I'd like to do just a little bit more on a tally just for the purpose of some of the things he says may be far-fetched, but as you just stated, there is no question that this is a plan, and this plan was written years and years ago, and now they're fulfilling it. But this man, he is an international mover and shaker that advises the heads of nations, as which directed by the most profitable economies and political and social within the scope of the world affairs. This man was in charge of a $12 billion bank. Now, part of those funds of that bank was contributed by these United States, and the purpose of it was to restructure the entire world, in actuality. In this book, he discusses the future of the world and who will dominate the economy, as well as the political and military arenas. He touches on world dominance and pretty much tells about the elimination of the United States, that we do not have a chance. There is absolutely no way. He says Americans' industry productivity is 3 times slower than that of Japan's and 2 times slower than Europe's. Not one new product that has appeared in the past few years was made by the United States, with the notable exception of the microprocessor. And even traditional consumer goods are no longer manufactured in a competitive way here in the United States. So he says the U.S. borrows $3 billion each month from Japan.
No, oh, right, go ahead.
Yeah, just from Japan. He says the amounts necessary to finance its deficit. So we have to have that money. And then these distressing developments are rooted in a profound culture mutation. The culture, now watch this. Now this is something here, Dr. Stan. The culture of immediate gratification. Now that's the culture in which we're living in. But you know what? That culture was given to us by them. They actually, I mean, there's no question about it that what they do is they implant ideas through the fashion industry, through the movie industry, through the record industry, the book industry, and they literally download thoughts into our minds to enable us to make these purchases, to desire and want. And then he says, because of this cult immediate gratification, the lack of internationalism, the weakness of global social solidarity, all reflects the country abandoning those values by which it is universally admired. And he's referring to the United States. The use of America's southern backyard in Central and Latin America is the country's main asset. For such rejuvenation to work, however, the U.S. must become a Spanish-speaking nation. All this is unlikely. Now, we have to consider and keep in mind that this was written 15 years ago, before we have the situation that we're in today. It says the American deficit with Asia comprises nearly two-thirds of the total deficit of the U.S. and equals a third of its entire trade, some $100 billion, of which half is Japan's alone. So as far as this nation is concerned, we're on a way out. He refers to two possible countries that are going to... Now, I know you said China, and for some reason, and that this you may be correct, they may have changed it, but what he says here is this. This new center will either be Europe or the Pacific Rim. The Pacific Sphere is the group formed by the Pacific Rim countries, that is to say, the rapidly developing countries of the East Asia, Japan, South Korea, Malaysia, Indonesia, Singapore, Taiwan, the Philippines, and Hong Kong now, and all the nations of the North and South America. I do not include China or Vietnam. Now, they have a purpose for China. And they said it will take our place in the next military giant. So they have a reason for building up China. And however, they say, and again, you know, you may be correct, Dr. Stan, they have, because a lot of times They set their plan, and they will change it or deviate, but deviate slightly, but they will deviate from what it is. But he says half of the world's production of microprocessors, a world market of $500 billion, is produced by Japan. So here we are, the four dragons of Hong Kong, Singapore, Taiwan, and South Korea produce one-sixth of the world's gross product. In 10 years, half of the world trade will occur on the Pacific Rim. Already, six of the world's largest ports are located in Asia, the Asian side of the Pacific. And then he also says that eight of the world's banks are located right there in Japan. So it says this. Now, if Eastern Europe will rejoin the market economy, and that's a big if, because, as you know, this European market thing is not gelling like it's supposed to. But it says if they join the economic market, it will then be able to develop as the most populated, the richest, and the most creative center in the world. If not, the new center will likely be Japan, for it, although an island nation, combines the necessary conditions for attracting global monetary, industrial, and even cultural power. Japan has several advantages over America and Europe. The mass production of high technology consumer products has been developed there longer than anywhere else in the world. There is a coherent compact of state and industry with a common will to take, maintain, and expand market share, with a cultural tradition of self-mastery. And all these factors are pluses in a country that's going to rule. Now, here's the negative of Japan. He says, but can Japan create a social value that the people of the world will embrace? Is Japan willing to assume the role of military protector of the periphery and the hinterland? And these are two terms that he uses, periphery meaning the surrounding areas, and then the hinterland meaning the actual center. He says, a role that the center must fulfill. So whoever's running this show, they have to be able to do this. The answers are not all obvious, especially after Japan's passive behavior during the Gulf War. For the first time in the history of capitalism, a nation that could become the center hesitates to pay the price and bear the burden of assuming an imperial mantle. So we could see this is all laid out.
Of course, the thing is that this was written in 1990. It was 1991 when those eight banks, of course, eight of the 10 largest banks in the world were Japanese banks in 1990. By 1993 and 1994, those banks, which had had very, very valuable stocks, were suddenly penny stocks, and Japan went into a tailspin. Their Nikkei stock exchange went from 40,000 to 10,000. The value of their property dropped 90%. But what has really happened, in the intervening years, is the center of production has shifted from Japan to China. China today is the fourth largest economy in the world, having recently just replaced, I think, Great Britain, I'm not sure, but certainly the United States is number one, Japan is number two, Germany is number three, number four is China, number five is Great Britain, I think that's the way it goes, number six or seven is California, incidentally, but certainly everything is changing. Now, you were mentioning, of course, that we're having to borrow $3 billion a month from Japan. Right today, we have to borrow $3 billion every day from somebody in the world just to keep our economy going. And, of course, as they point out in this book, this has happened before, and how Spain in the 1600s sped itself into oblivion, went bankrupt, and became a second-rate nation. And what was it that Cicero said about, Rome? He said the budget should be balanced, domestic spending should be limited, the arrogance of officials should be tempered, and assistance to foreign lands should be reduced, else Rome will go bankrupt. And Rome did go bankrupt and became a dictatorship. We'll be back in just a moment and welcome your calls here at Radio Liberty. Well, I'll pick up the story there, because this is really a fascinating prediction. It was written 15 years ago, But what it really does is talk about the fact that the world is changing and America is going to lose its preeminence because we are going to spend ourselves into oblivion, and then, of course, our position of leadership is going to be replaced. And everything centers around money. Do you want to pick up that idea? Because he points out that those who have the money, of course, make the rules.
He says this. He says advanced technologies will create a class of products and goods that will empower individuals as never before while shattering traditional bonds of country, community, and family. So they're going to, they have to get rid of any bounds or any binds, anything that this cohesive that holds us together. They have to make us all separate and individual. So these new objects, which I call nomadic, he comes up with a new term here, because they are small and portable, will alter relationships across the spectrum of modern life. Above all, they will change man's relationship to man. Now, here's what you were saying, Dr. Stan. Those objects that industry is creating now will be mobile, embodying knowledge, providing communication, executing a myriad of services, watch this, by substitution for the people who perform such services today. In other words, you will not need a factory. You will not need an office. All you need are these technology instruments, these, as he calls them, nomadic objects, and you will be your own walking office by yourself. So these new goods will not spring full-blown from the fevered fantasies of nerds. In other words, there's no more garage nerds that are going to come up with the technology to do another computer-type situation, he said, and techno-freaks, but from the competitive imperative of industry. He said, by 1986, the results were clear. The average American individual debt amounted to an unprecedented 66% of his income. With the aid of advertising, now watch this, especially through the medium of TV, all kinds of previously unimaginable dreams and desires were awakened. You know, Plato said, he said, we give the people their culture through plays and books. But today, Dr. Stan, it's called the fashion industry, the book industry, the music industry, movie industry, that Hollywood was given the task of creating the culture of mass for the masses. Hollywood's the culture creators. I don't know if you remember or not, but during the ceremony on 9-1-1, Susan Sarandon used the term, she said, we, the culture creators of Hollywood, cannot stand by and allow this to happen. We think we're being entertained when we're really being downloaded with ideas that guide us down a well-directed path of thinking, and there's no question about it. But he goes on to talk about these nomadic objects of the future will represent the life, mind, and values of those who create and use them. They will essentially be extensions of our senses and of our bodily functions. At first glance, it seems as if it's disordered or disconnected or incoherent. But in reality, they are united by a single governing principle. They are designed to manipulate information, images, forms, sound at a great speed, transforming services performed by people for other people into objects at once portable and usable, produced by industry.
Hold that thought. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and Al Duncan is talking about this book written by this gentleman, Jacques Attari, back in 2000. And, of course, really what's so fascinating about this is he's really anticipating exactly what is going on in the world today. And one of the quotations I thought was so interesting, he was talking about this tremendous disparity that is going to develop between the haves and the have-nots. And you would think that, of course, this would be a more equitable distribution of goods. But this is what he wrote. Like New Yorkers who every day face homeless beggars who loiter around automated teller machines pleading for spare chains, these wealthy wanderers will everywhere be confronted by roving masses of poor nomads, boat people on a planetary scale, seeking to escape from the destitute periphery where most of the world's population will continue to live. These impoverished migrants who ply the planet searching for sustenance and shelter, the desire inflamed by the ubiquitous and seductive images of consumerism they will see on satellite TV broadcast from Paris and Los Angeles or Tokyo, desperately hoping to shift from what Alvin Toffler has called the future shock. Well, ladies and gentlemen, we really know that these people are really going to be impoverished. A vast majority of the people will be certainly without the benefits that are going to be coming down the line. And let me complete that. Gradually shifting from what Alvin Toffler has called the slow world to the fast world, they will live the life of the living dead. Now, these are his words. This is one of the leaders of the world who runs a $12 billion bank, anticipating what the future holds. As we move into globalism, as we lose our idealism, as we lose our Christian values, we will have a very rich, and then we will have a countless billions of the living dead.
You're absolutely correct. He says that this, and this is, touches on it precisely, the new racism will have many faces. It reveals itself in the opposition between Islam and Christianity, and it can already be seen in the widespread hostility to dark-skinned immigrants who search for home and hearth in the inhospitable North. In the coming world order, there will be winners and there will be losers. The losers will outnumber the winners by an unimaginable factor. They will find themselves pinned in, asphyxiated by pollution, and neglected through indifference. The horrors of the 20th century will fade by comparison.
And here's what he's really doing, is talking about what they are planning to do
exactly
with this
exactly
process of globalization in the new world order that they believe is coming, and they're making all the plans for it, and they're doing everything they can, of course, to be sure that how this is going to work. And, of course, what they're going to do, first of all, is destroy America. And he makes this point over and over again. America is going to be destroyed economically, socially, and physically. It will no longer be a great world power. And as we move, of course, increasingly into debt, and he points out that, you know, other great nations have been destroyed. What destroyed them? War after war after war. And so why did we attack Afghanistan? Well, to get Osama bin Laden, of course, but we didn't get Osama bin Laden. Why did we attack Iraq? Well, because they had weapons of mass destruction. They were threatening America. But they didn't have weapons of mass destruction. They were threatening America. Why are we going to attack Iran? Why? Because they may be able to develop nuclear weapons and threaten the peace of the world. And we have to attack this very, very quickly because we can't wait. Even though the CIA says it'll be 5 to 10 years before they have nuclear weapons, the Bush administration is determined to attack Iraq very, very soon. And ladies and gentlemen out there in the listening audience, consider the implications of what a war, a direct attack on a country that does not threaten us will do. How do you think the rest of the Muslim world is going to feel? How do you think the rest of the civilized world is going to feel towards America? And especially as our dollar continues to drop in its value, and the dollar is gradually going down, once again moving towards 80 from 85, and seems to be a gradual, slow drop in the value of the dollar. And as other countries raise their interest rates and we leave ours at tight, why, of course, that major impetus towards maintaining the value of the dollar will be gone. But the major thing is, we are the largest debtor nation, not only in the world today, but in all of the world's history. Now, our telephone number is 1-800-1-888-24-LIBERTY. That's 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295. 1-888-24-LIBERTY, the book, Millennium. And it's a fascinating, fascinating read by Jacques Attali, who's one of the elitists, runs a very, very wealthy man, runs a very, very powerful bank in Europe and France. So if you'd like to enter our conversation, you agree, you disagree, this is truly a prophetic book. Our telephone number, 1-888-24-LIBERTY, 464-8295. This 1-888-24-LIBERTY, 464-8295, right here at Radio Liberty. Well, I'll go ahead, pick up the story there.
You know, I listened to what you said about us attacking Iraq, Afghanistan. All that is, Dr. Stan, is a cultural war. 9/11 is a culture war to standardize the world. It's a culture war against the last remaining rebels, so to speak. It's the holdouts, and we're talking about there that will not comply. This war is to force the last group of rebels into what they call democracy, and that's exactly what they're doing. Any fundamental, for instance, Christians fall in the same category as fundamental Muslims. This thinking of them being sovereign is what has to go. You know, you mentioned something else too, in regards to the Persian Gulf. He says this: the Persian Gulf confrontation, for example, has served to distract attention from the monumentous shift now taking place in the world balance of power. So all this was you watch the right hand and you don't see what the left hand is actually doing. He touches on two factors or two things that Dr. Stan, I really want to touch on before we go, before this is over, and one of them is education. He says self-diagnostic devices will help measure educational progress. Already computer tests and educational games are preparing the public for this eventuality. Again, they always prepare us, and they prepare us through some type of media, whether it's the movies, like in the science fiction. They prepared us in. If you recall, even Star Trek and Star Wars, they had talking computers and cell phones. But all of this, it was to prepare the public for what was coming. I never forget reading Des Griffin's book, The Fourth Reich of the Rich, and he talked in there about back in the early 1900s, even the late 1800s, that the elite used to communicate via telephone. And this was long before they gave it to us. Everything that we get, they have given to us, and I believe they actually feed it to us. And by the time we get it, it's always obsolete. Everything that they do give us is always obsolete. But the education system, he says, that nomadic objects of the same sort will allow children to learn by themselves knowledge that today is provided by the world of schools and teachers. The difference between education and play will blur. Tomorrow...
Hold that thought right there, Mike. Well, this is Dr. Stan. Our guest is Al Duncan. We're talking about Jacques Attali's book, Millennium, and this is all about the New World Order. And he uses that term over and over again,
yes,
the
does.
New World Order. And Al was just saying how, you know, the book points out how they're going to manipulate us and control us and use education to control the children. Everything is going to be manipulated. And, of course, you're going to have this fabulously wealthy group of people living in penthouses in these beautiful cities with multiple skyscrapers. And then the vast part of the world, the impoverished world, the so-called southern world, where the people there are simply landless, helpless nomads, the land of the living dead. And this is exactly what they want. They want a feudalistic system, and this is what it's about, using the military and the police to protect the people of great wealth, because it all has to do with money. If you have the money, you have the power, and if you don't have the money, then you're a landless peasant. And they keep talking about how, oh, we want to help the people, the impoverished people, but that's just the talk to justify the globalist system, which will allow the rich to get richer and the poor to get poorer. And the poor throughout the world will continue to be raped there. Their natural resources will be shipped to the wealthy, and certainly with tremendous implications and tremendous unrest throughout the world. And there will be wars and there will be violence, and it will not be a pretty world they're describing, and yet this is exactly what they're looking for. Our telephone number, 1-888-24-LIBERTY, 1-888-24-LIBERTY, or 464-8295. And remember, if they told us what they were really going to do, if they told us that they were going to impoverish the people of America and transfer the wealth to Europe and to the Orient, they were going to do this intentionally and purposely. And then, of course, create a ruling class and then a massive impoverished class, just like they have in Mexico. Wouldn't the people object? So what we do is we tell them, oh, this is going to be good for you. Globalization is wonderful. You're really going to prosper. Why? It's just going to take a little bit of adjustment. We're going to have to retrain you for another job, knowing full well that the job you're getting retrained for is not going to be there. Our telephone number, 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295. And, of course, this gives you real insight into the thinking of the people who have been planning globalization and where it's going to lead. Remember, this book is written 15 years ago, Millennium by Jack Attali. Go ahead, Al.
He said, he says, tomorrow children will listen to the computer teacher just as today they listen to the calculator instead of the memorizing the multiplication tables. That living life through electronic images will travel and we travel and experience the world vicariously and safely. Thus, a TV program is a particularly profitable product, and it will continue to be a great demand for many years to come. At the same time, the desire actually to embark on voyages will stimulate unprecedented growth in tourism. The major form of economic development, tourism, will require a ceaseless growth in hotels and transportation. You notice everywhere you look, they're building hotels, of ports and airports, of trains and highways in Pacific and European spheres. This will, as well as in the picturesque, if dangerous, periphery, meaning it will be dangerous in those outer areas. The drugs, and he mentions drugs here, Dr. Stan. He says any country that is not willing to stop the drug traffic that is existing off of the traffic of drugs, they will be X'd out. In other words, they will not become a part or be able to come into the economic financial growth of a country who does. And they said, we will have funds and we will loan them monies if that is the problem. If the problem is, if they're willing to stop using drugs to sustain themselves, then we will loan them money. But he talks about the individual, and he says this, drugs are the nomadic substance of the millennium losers, of the excluded and the discarded. Linked by radio to complex electronic networks, it will allow a person to connect himself to whoever he wishes without allowing anyone to know where he is. This is a technology, Dr. Stan, that he's talking about will be implemented. And I can see, let me read this a little more and then I'll expound on it. Calling his name will be enough to talk to him or to write to him. One day, commands will be given by simply speaking. And I can only assume that this would be done through the RFID. He said only the most fortunate rich nomads will have the means to become property owners in the large cities, which will be the magnetic poles for their brethren from all areas and regions of the globe. Cities will be fortified, dangerous places, the tangled heart of electronic networks, a cabled field of dreams. Now he says humans will become objects, and this is a rather frightening. But like I said, we have to stop and consider. This is a man that the world, and I do mean world, because he names the countries that have contributed to this $12 billion bank that he heads. And he says we will fabricate artificial lungs, kidneys, stomachs, and hearts. Perhaps one day even livers. Even the human brain might eventually be artificially reproduced. Genetic engineers are devising methods to permit the human body to be stimulated to defend or repair itself by gene therapy through the implementation of genetically altered cells. Current therapeutic products include a human growth hormone to be used to combat dwarfism. One can imagine that man himself will become a nomadic object covered with artificial organs. He will become an artificial organ himself to be bought and sold like any other object. knowing that man himself is the only particularly complex organism, we cannot avoid the prospect that some people may hope on one day to patent a human being. One can imagine that one day, soon, a woman might choose the sex of her child, which would disturb one of the major statistical equilibriums of human history. One can also envision a time when parents will be able to choose the characteristics of their children they want to have. Today, it is already possible to detect the genetic foundations of cystic fibrosis and Down syndrome. To find these sorts of flaws, projects are attempting to map and decode the more than 100,000 genes that define humans. If successful, such research might lead to the establishment of a sort of genetic identity card for each individual. It is a great scientific challenge, one of the most difficult ever attempted. Who can oppose it? I want to say something here, Dr. Stan. I've watched people such as Maurice Strong, such as Henry Kissinger, or McNamara. And these men are in their 80s, Dr. Stan. But if you watch them, and I saw Kissinger on TV, the cameras were trying to get to him, and I saw him literally break away and run up the stairs almost like a teenager. And it seems that the ones who are dedicated to them, and he is definitely one who's dedicated, just like McNamara, and just like Maurice Strong, the ones that are dedicated, there is some kind of, and reading this has really put, put a piece of the puzzle together as to how they can really stay young. These are 85 years old. If one of the listeners know his actual age, but I think the last I read he was 85. An 85-year-old man that 2 years ago runs up, I'm talking about a flight of stairs like at the federal building, and I was amazed. So, and you listen to him and you watch him. But anyway, he sets the stage for this. He says, one could imagine a man will learn, like replicate a series of models that he himself has defined. He will be sorely tempted at this point to purchase and consume his own doubles, copies, as it were, of beloved people, or specially created dream men and women, hybrids made up of donations of artificial features chosen to achieve particular objectives. Already, feces are bought and sold, and the healthy lives of the dead are sold to the living. One day, everyone will be able to make inventories of himself or of others, each through the storehouse of organs, consume other men as objects, and wander in bodies and other minds. The result will be a kind of nomadic madness. Man will create himself just as he manufactures merchandise. The distinction between culture and barbarism, between life and death, will dissolve. Where will we find death? It's almost scriptural, is that not? Where Paul says, O death, where is your sting? In the destruction of the last clone of oneself, or in the forgetfulness of others? And will we still be able to speak of life when man is thought of as only a product and an object? The structures of life, the embryo, as well as the gene, must be declared to be the inalienable property of the entire species and be given an absolute sanctuary free from manipulation, even if doing so will mean refusing to care for or to correct the genetic defect. We must be vigilant in order to avoid any action in any country that might cause irreversible genetic mutation. He will have enrolled in himself in what will amount to a cult of industrial cannibalism. Boy, you read this and you say this is a kook, it is science fiction, but when you stop and think, this man is no small potatoes. I mean, this man is worthy or merits us at least listening to. But this is the direction, Dr. Stan, they're talking about taking you and I and the world. He says, a vision of global stewardship will require, above all, political leaders who recognize the need for limits and have the courage to abandon traditional notions of national sovereignty. All that can be reasonably said is that the world will change more in the next 10 years than in any other period of history. This much is clear. Between now and the year 2000, the order of money will become universal. all economic systems will worship at the altar of the market. People everywhere were sacrificed for the gods of profit. Military prowess will give way to economic might. Democracy will generally hold sway. The winners of this new era will be creators. Creation will not be for a form of consumption anymore, but will become work. The creator who turns dreams into objects will be considered as the workers who deserve prestige and society's gratitude and remuneration. Now watch this one, Dr. Stan. The problems that will plague millennium man require that we restore the idea of evil, the idea of sacred, to the center of political life. The institutions of the U.S. were not designed for this mission. That's why we have to go, Dr. Stan. That's why America has to go. Watch this. They have neither the means nor the mandate. They must move to a higher level international organization by becoming institutions with a truly supernatural authority, a genuine planetary political power that can impose standards in the areas in which the survival of the human species is at stake. Few countries will easily accept such a transfer of power. I do not underestimate the difficulty of gaining the democratic adherence of such a scheme in the world of 7 or 8 billion people, watch this, with 5 billion below the level of survival. It says protection from our enemies. Now here's the protecting ourselves from worldwide arms proliferation will require the formation of a higher authority with democratically constituted powers. Such an authority will supersede bilateral negotiation, establish inventories, verify the application of agreements, and provide sanctions for violations as much for chemical and biological and nuclear weapons as for more traditional arms. Protecting ourselves from the scourge of drugs will require international regulations aimed at excluding from the international financial community any institution that allows drug money to be laundered. In addition, an international agency must be provided to support those countries that need to convert economies that depend on drugs into their struggle against narcotic profiteers. Just as Social Security and family assistance allowed women to become consumers, from the young to the old, have some minimal income. They have to have some minimal income. Allowances and student salaries will become institutionalized and decisively important for a country. Everything will depend on its ability to educate its citizens. Now watch this one, Dr. Stan. Finally, nation states will differ according to the social project that they implicitly offer to their people. For some nations, each citizen must have the right to human dignity. For some, it will be enough to allow each person the right to become rich. For others, it will be the right to a decent income, to housing, and to some power in the workplace. Above all, a new sacred government, a covenant, must be struck between man and nature so that the earth endures. Dr. Stan, we got a situation going here that is really frightening, but this is the direction these evil, wicked, satanic people are taking us.
I think you're absolutely right, Al. You know, as I look at this book, and I see these pictures that they have.
Yes.
You know, and they are very, very bizarre pictures, and you have to look at them, and you wonder, what are they really saying? Well, one of those pictures, you know, of course, is of the losers, and you see these people almost as if they're living in hell. And remember, he refers to the fact that the vast majority of the people in the world will be living in the land of the living dead, and this sense of hopelessness on their faces in these pictures. But look at some of the other pictures. You look very carefully, you'll see a pyramid, a picture of a pyramid. It's very, very vague. You have to look several times. But you see, as Manly P. Hall tells us in his classic book, The Secret Teachings of All Ages, down through the centuries, down through the millennium, there have been an elite group. And, of course, they communicate through signs and symbols and secret societies, but they also communicate through pictures.
Yeah.
And there in the picture is the secret message. And as I look at these pictures, you know, in this book that you gave me, I see here an occult message, you know, that it is very real. And, of course, behind this whole move towards the New World Order that Zakatali talks about are these truly demonic forces that have, since the beginning of all time, have been moving us towards a one-world government and a one-world religion. And, of course, very obviously into a feudalistic society where the vast majority of the people will be living with a sense of hopelessness, or, as he refers to them, the living dead. Well, Al, I think it's a fascinating book. I hope many of our listeners will want to look into this even further. You'll have to get the book through a used bookstore, or we could even run one off for you. But I think it's a very, very important book. Everything that's going on today is planned. Don't you have that feeling?
Everything is, Dr. Stan, there is not one thought. They say that they will implant every thought in our minds. You know, we're the last thinkers left, Dr. Stan, and I mean that independent thinking is an outcast.
And you that's where the whole lot will be back here in just a minute to wrap up our program with Al Duncan, our good friend. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and certainly our guest this evening has been Al Duncan. We've been talking about the book by Zakatali called Millennium, The New World Order, The Winners and the Losers. And this, according to their plan, and remember, this man heads a bank with $12 billion in it, the vast majority of people throughout the world are going to be losers. And all this talk about how we're going to help these people in third world countries, no, they're going to impoverish the American people. But they're not going to help the people in the other countries. They're going to be the living dead. Al, you got about 2.5 minutes to wrap up the program.
Well, I had started mentioning the fact that we're the last of the thinkers, Dr. Stan. And you talk to people about this, and their eyes glaze over. And if you talk to them outside of the box, meaning the ABC, NBC, CBS, etc., then either their eyes glaze over or they actually get mad. And if they don't want to hear it, I have come to the point, then I'll move on. There's no sense. They literally, I believe this, Dr. Stan, they literally cannot hear this. They're thinking, they have been downloaded with thoughts, and their thinking is so directed in such a way, they believe without a doubt. It says, what is this, Brzezinski? He says, the people surely won't be able to reason for themselves. The scientific techniques we use makes them believe that the media is there to do the reasoning for them. So when we tell them things they haven't heard on the media, they literally cannot believe it. You know, here's a scripture. It says this. It says, and like I said, we're the last independent thinkers. In Revelation 12, 9, Jesus says, Satan, which deceives the whole world, all of their documentaries say individualism is the ultimate enemy. Anybody who thinks independently is the enemy, and there's no question about it. And Satan has deceived their minds. Jesus says the whole world. Now, it's amazing in that scripture, he doesn't say with the exception of the elite. He does not say that there. So in every form, in some form or another, even you and I, Dr. Stan, are being deceived by these people, by Satan through these people. And this system, I see it to be a new Soviet system which is blended with democracy and thrust upon the world. And if you look, it's simply controlled through fear. And they teach everyone to be subservient in a group. So we must hang in there. I mean, we have to hang in there. And at the right time or ability, then we can express ourselves to others. But it's George Orwell who talked about in his book in 1984.
Hey, we're out of time, Al. I'm going to have to let you go. But
it's okay.
Thank you so much for being with us.
You're more than welcome.
Well, this is Dr. Stan, and our guest this evening has been Al Duncan, and Chris, Al's a good friend. If you haven't read his book, The Master Plan, we do have that in stock. That's The Master Plan, and I write the foreword to the book and played some small part in getting it printed, and I think it's an important book. It has a powerful message, I promise you, that you read the book, you'll never forget the ending. Well, anyway, The Master Plan, if you'd like to get Al's book, it's 1-800-544-8927. Now, of course, this evening we've been talking about the book, Zakatali, Millennium, The Winners and the Losers. they know exactly what's coming down the line. And, of course, the hopelessness that the vast majority of the nomads will have as they go from place to place looking for sustenance that is not going to be there for them. The ruling elite, of course, has no concern or compassion, not one word in this entire book about human. They talk about spirituality, or take set along with that, that hostage to the devil and the four tapes set, the wisdom of Malachi Martin. And then, of course, we have a great new DVD. It's called The Rape of the Soul, and it's put out by a traditional Catholic about pornography in the Catholic Church and in Catholic art. That's The Rape of the Soul. It's full-length motion picture. I showed in, I think, 12 major markets earlier this year. Not a word in the controlled medium, because they don't want you to know what that movie shows. And I would comment, I have a small part in that. I didn't get paid for it, other than that I got a trip to Chicago and another one to New York. But it's important that we understand what's really going on in the world today, and that there is a conspiracy against Christianity. There is a conspiracy against God. There is a conspiracy against freedom. And it all ties into this age-old plan, this age-old occult demonic plan, a new world order, a new world religion. Let me suggest my book, Brotherhood of Darkness, or the DVD or the video that goes with it. That's the Brotherhood of Darkness, and if you can get a case of them and put them out, you can get them at a reduced price. We want to get this book as out as far and wide as we can, because it has an impact on people's lives. And then, of course, my video on the World Revolution, where you'll see my interview with Ambassador Smith back in 1980, as he tells you how we intentionally brought Fidel Castro to power, knowing he was a communist. And if we put things into perspective, and if you doubt that our leaders are very, very close to Fidel Castro, and all this so-called Castro is the enemy bit is simply window dressing, you really want to get David Rockefeller's memoirs, especially page 405. We carry the memoirs. David Rockefeller's memoirs, where he tells you that his daughter is so close to that great American patriot, Fidel Castro. Fidel Castro? Yes, Fidel Castro. David Rockefeller's daughter frequently visits Castro. They get along great together. Why would the leader of one of the leaders of the communist world, and I have a friend who's the daughter of the leading capitalist in America, the man who formed the Trilateral Commission, the man who leads and still leads the Council on Foreign Relations, which is America's invisible government? Well, you need to get the video and find out. It's called World Revolution. Our telephone number, 1-800-544-8927. 1-800-544-8927. Remember our conference, our all-day conference on the 29th of October. Call in and make your reservations. That's the all-day conference, the 29th of October. 1-800-544-8927. Constance Cumby will be here. And, of course, Chris Pinto and